This week, we feed Ken to the Occupy Wall Street protesters as we try to make this episode more memorable than the Department of Energy. Welcome to the Midwest Peace Process.
Ladies and gentlemen,
I have the pleasure to present to you now.
Ladies and gentlemen,
I have the pleasure to present to you
the Midwest Peace Process.
The world is very different now.
The Midwest Peace
To remind
process.
America of the fierce urgency of now. 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 Now.
All right, welcome to episode 11. I'm Jerry.
I'm Rob.
I'm Jeremy, filling in for Ken.
Wait, what?
Where's Ken?
What happened to Ken?
We're happy to have you, Jeremy.
Yes.
Thank you.
Jeremy is a avid listener and is now a guest host this week because Ken is on vacation. So we may turn this into a regular thing where, you know, every week we have a different listener on as a guest host.
Here we go. Send in your submissions.
Wow, and, you're already kicking me out before I even get started.
Which means we'll be done in about 2 weeks.
Yeah, maybe this is the start of a coup, Jerry. Maybe these guest artists are going to take over and then they'll be just you.
That's right. No, it's going to be a spinoff.
Oh, yes.
Jeremy will start his own podcast.
Which
is perfectly legal and understandable in an anarchist system.
Yeah, there's no copyright infringement going
that's,
on.
So, that's right.
So we're good.
Competition is good. Spurs innovation.
Except if you try to steal our idea, Jeremy. Not okay. Right.
Then we'll have to cut you.
Well, speaking of anarchists and other political views, I guess I should give a little brief summary of where I come from.
Absolutely.
Oh, let's hear it.
I grew up Democrat. Parents were big Democrats, or my mom was, and therefore my dad decided he should be, I guess, maybe.
He's a wise Democrat.
Yeah. I kind of turned Republican once I got a job. saw that, you know, how much was taken out of my check. And that started before that. I guess it probably started in college. But I consider myself really non-conforming, socially liberal, fiscally conservative. I did vote for Bill Clinton the first time I ever got to vote. I voted for George Bush twice, and I reluctantly voted for McCain for no other reason than I didn't like Obama's preachy tone. So that's where I stand. So that gives you any idea.
You're anti-preaching tone.
I am. I don't like being preached to. I don't like being told, well, I'm going to fix this. You know, that last guy was dumb. I'm going to fix this next week. You know, don't try and sell me on that kind of stuff.
You like a more realist approach.
That's right. Yeah. Some people call me negative, but I think I'm just a realist.
That's what all the negative people say.
There's a fine line between cynicism and pragmatism.
That's right.
What you said reminded me of a quote. A libertarian is a liberal who understands economics, or a conservative who has ever had his ass kicked by a cop.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
I'll buy that.
Where'd you get that one? I hadn't heard that one.
Jerry said it. Yeah. It's just when he comes up with something witty, he says, I know this quote.
That's right. I make them up and then I attribute them to other people. Actually, it's from Dr. Richard Boddy. I don't know if
that name sounds made up.
Yeah, I know.
Maybe we should get into Rob's second topic.
Okay, so speaking of topics, this episode we're going to do like we did last time. We're going to cover current events in a sort of round table fashion, what we like to call the lightning round. And then we'll finish up the show with our listener feedback. So, without further ado, Rob, you want to kick us off with one of your stories?
Oh, yeah, sure. We'll start off. Just been thinking about the Rick Perry gaffe.
Yeah.
At the debate and why I found it somewhat fascinating, or if there's even anything fascinating about it. You know, it's not just that there's gaffes and that it's in a debate. I mean, I think there's been a long political history of stupid things said in debates or misspeaking or
sure.
poor performance. That's not really all that interesting. I guess what I found kind of fascinating is I was thinking of some of my hardcore conservative pals and friends and thinking that they were so deep in that a situation like that happening in a debate wouldn't deter them at all from supporting the guy as a presidential mind, you know. So, you know, he couldn't get his mind around the idea that there was a Department of Energy, like forgot his talking point. But depending on who you are, I have this idea that there's people out there that say, well, I don't care that he can't even remember the name of the huge departments he wants to cut. I just wish he would cut more departments. So it's not even about that his only real gaffe is he said he only cut three departments and not four or five, you know?
Right.
And it folds back to kind of what I said in some other episode. You can search the transcripts of our prior episodes. They're on the website. Jerry types them by hand like a stenographer.
Yeah, I do. Glad I took that court reporter's class.
I was thinking about how the thing to watch in debates isn't really talking points or ability to spew the planned attack of what all those debates are about. You know what the questions are. You know they practice. That's not really what it's about. And it's certainly not about whether or not it's really true that he would really gut, you know, three complete departments of the federal government, which is total garbage. But I said it's a lot about how a mind works, because I imagine being president is kind of hard. I don't know. I would guess. I think we kind of lose sight that it's supposed to be kind of a hard job, and you're not supposed to just get by on going with your gut.
Yeah.
And we kind of lose that fact. And listening to a situation like that didn't seem like a sharp mind around the topic. You know, it wasn't a debate. It wasn't about debate performance. It was like a mind crumbling in front of our eyes.
Right.
And I've felt like that before. I feel like that every day, but I'm not running for president, you know.
Right. And you're not the governor of the second largest state in the country.
Exactly. Exactly. And we make fun of its own, Obama's strength turned into a weak point about his eloquence and his ease at the podium. But I think a lot about being president must be about communicating verbally with the people around you, whether they're staff or other heads of state. Like, I need a verbal communicator. It seems like that's a good thing.
Right.
So I factor all those in. I'm like, man, am I the only one? I was just fascinated by the idea that there's probably a good chunk of Perry supporters that saw that happen and went, I don't care. I wish you just would have thought it's more, you know, right. agencies to completely destroy.
Well, I think he should have taken a page out of the Bush playbook and just at that point looked at the camera and went,
you're right. Yeah. I do kind of like that he was intellectually honest that he couldn't remember what the third one was,
right.
But he didn't just pick one, you know?
Right.
Like I would have been like, oh, I'm in trouble. Department of, you know, interior. Right. I would, or just right. made up, you know,
yeah.
Cause if you just make up one, you know, the Department of Unicorns right. or something.
The hardware department.
My conspiracy gene kicked in a little bit as I thought more about this. And what's big in Texas? Oil. So
yes.
Does he really want to be in a debate saying we're gonna dump the Department of Energy?
Well, he seemed like he wanted to say it.
He seemed like he wanted to, but maybe not. Maybe it was an act.
It was Freudian. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, or Freudian, or purposely not saying that in a debate. And but I can't imagine he would really purposely do that, because it made him look like a fool. So
you think he was about to say Department of Energy, and like in his mind, like everything froze and there's like two conflicting armies in his brain about ready to face off.
Yeah, like
and he was just watching it play out during that whole time.
Right.
If I say Department of Energy here, then
but I have to say I'm on board with him dumping the Department of Energy. If you know, I'm sure that won't happen, because nobody ever lives up to those big promises like that. But I, as a kind of a coincidence, I received an email from a guy I work with about the Department of Energy and what a waste it is. You know, it's been around for 34 years and has this $24 billion budget, and it doesn't really do anything. Just like most of the governmental departments, I guess.
Yeah. Well, and that raises an interesting point in my mind, because it seems to me, and I'd have to look up the dates, but it seems to me like well over half of the cabinet-level departments that we have now were created in the last 40 years. You know, up until that point, we got by on the State Department, the War Department, and the Interior. You know, like for 200 years, we got by on three cabinet officers, and now there's like 20.
It's a jobs program.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, I guess I just like the idea of, I think as a wavering lefty centrist, I'm open to a well-posed conservative or libertarian argument. I keep waiting for one of these jokers up there to give it to me and like fascinate my feeble mind, and it's just not happening.
Yeah, it hasn't happened yet.
Right. But maybe it will. Hey, I still hold out hope. Yeah. Actually, and like I say, like Ron Paul does the most for making my brain tumble. You know, the rest just seems silly to me.
Well, Santorum's waiting in the wings.
All ready to pounce.
That's right. He's got his rally hair on. He's ready.
That's good.
He has a Google problem, though. He's going to have to overcome that.
Yeah.
He does.
All right,
I'll,
Jeremy.
I'll yield the floor. I'll yield the rest of my time to the gentleman from...
Hmm.
The gentleman on your right.
Who was on the left.
Well, should we talk about the $200 oil?
Sure.
Okay. Tell us about it. I don't know what you're going to go on
about. It's a headline I saw today, and the whole thing about Israel being on the brink of attacking Iran.
Okay.
There's been a lot more rhetoric lately. This happens about, I don't know, once a year for the last 6 years that somebody's going to attack Iran over their nuclear program. But it seems to be gaining a little steam, not the least of which is attributed to the new IAEA report saying, yeah, they're making weapons.
Right.
Which, where were these guys 6 years ago claiming, oh no, everything's fine, you know, but whatever. So now they're speculating, well, if because of all this unrest, and if Israel attacks or if the UK attacks, then we'll have $200 a barrel oil. It's so arbitrary. The price of oil is so arbitrary, and it ticks me off every time I see headlines like this, because it's pure speculation. There's no reason why it would go to necessarily $200, effectively doubling the price.
Well, did the article say anything about Israel specifically? Like, had they made any overtures?
No, nothing that hasn't been reported in the last month.
Okay. The reason I ask is, I mean, if anybody was going to freak out, it seems like Israel is the one that you should freak out about, because they've actually attacked Iran before. So they have, you know, there is a precedent for this.
Yeah. Well, I don't think the question is, you know, that, oh my gosh, Israel is going to attack Iran. Everybody believes that they can do it and would do it with our help, of course, or with the help of the British. But I think that's kind of a foregone conclusion, that if somebody attacks Iran, it's going to be Israel, the U.S., or the U.K. And why is that going to cause gas to go to, or oil to go to $200 a barrel? You know, that's, and yeah, they're the third largest exporter. Okay, fine. But I still don't.
You're just saying it's arbitrary.
It's arbitrary.
And even whether it would go up or down is determined by even other factors.
Well, right. Seems.
Right.
And I guess the whole point of this is that somebody sees that number, oh, 200, so then they drive towards that number arbitrarily.
Right. But you're saying that prices are determined by other things than the free market, Jeremy?
I know, it's shocking, Rob.
Shocking. Let me take a step back. Kiss myself. I don't know. I mean, what are the factors that determine the price of oil? And I don't think it's I think the happy model of supply and demand left us a little while ago on that one.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. They arbitrarily control the supply.
That's right. That's why we need green energy.
Oh no!
Like solar panels.
Oh.
On our cars.
We ought to have a discussion about the solar panels, like a company that's going to make them.
you guys are offering an excellent segue, but I'm not ready to go into that topic.
Oh, come on. My oil thing is bombing here, Jerry.
Well, I was just about to say that, you know, it is truly arbitrary. And what drove that point home for me was last summer during the whole Gulf oil spill mess that, you know, oil prices normally go up during the summer, but last summer they didn't. They stayed the same throughout that entire episode, you know, and it wasn't until the middle of winter that they started going up again. And I found that interesting last year, and I asked the question then, what's the cover story going to be now if because they've always said that it's because demand goes up in the summertime because everybody's driving, going on vacation and whatnot.
Oh right.
But yeah. So what does that mean? Nobody went on vacation during the summer of 2010?
Well, right. All the beaches were closed, Jerry, because right, you know, they were right. Just inundated with oil and tar balls.
Obviously.
And I just don't understand that whole reasoning. Like, it seems like there's so many things that go into a family's not going on vacation. It seems so simplistic.
Yeah.
Like, oh, if that was $3.30 a gallon, I could do it. But that's $3.40. Sorry, kids.
That's right. That's going to break the bank.
Yeah, just don't. Yeah, it's so silly.
By the way, I misspoke before when I said that Israel had bombed Iran. It was Iraq.
Iraq, yeah.
They're old friends.
Nuclear planet.
It was called Operation Babylon.
Ooh.
It was June of 1981. They destroyed a nuclear reactor that was under construction.
See, we need that Iraq back. Where'd they go?
Yeah, where did they go?
I don't know.
I don't know. Maybe this. You guys are going to brand me a conspiracy theorist right out of the box here.
But that's what you bring. That's what you bring to the table.
I've always thought, since we went into Afghanistan and then not too long after went after Iraq, I thought, hey, we essentially have Iran surrounded here.
That's right.
Little right.
You know what? It was almost driving at that, because then the rhetoric started about their nuclear program, and you know, they've been playing patty cake with that for however long. And maybe since Obama is I'm not saying that like blaming him. Obama's plotting our exit strategy, but since that's become a definitive date, the exit dates for Afghanistan and Iraq. Maybe then, hey, we need a new war. So while we're leaving, we'll just kind of let some cruise missiles fly through the back door here.
Yeah, that's right. Where'd those go? I like that idea. Kind of like at the end of a fight, and you kind of walk away and you get one more, you know, just like
parting shot.
Right. Right. Oh, sorry. We just had these sitting around and we were just testing them out.
Well, and it kind of makes you wonder why Syria is in the middle of the brutal oppression that it's in the middle of right now, given that, you know, there's still, what is there, 50,000 U.S. troops in Iraq still? Yeah. And we could just choose to exit through Syria, too, and on our way to the Mediterranean and clean house as we go.
The interesting thing about someone attacking Iran, because they're obviously trying to say, well, if anybody attacks us, we're going to do this and this. And
right.
But another article I read went down a litany of reasons why Iran doesn't really have any allies who could come to its aid.
Right.
If that happened.
Not afraid of them.
No. I mean, I think Ron Paul made this point in one of the earlier debates so far this year, when he said that, they can't even refine enough gasoline for their own people to drive their cars like we do in this country. So, if they can't produce the fuel to power their military loses a little bit of its punch, I think.
don't discount a good rowboat,
Right.
Jet ski.
No, that.
How they took out the coal, right?
That's all you need. Coal.
Just a little John boat.
No, it's interesting that you bring that up, because that actually led to a fair amount of unrest in Iran several years ago.
Yeah.
There were long gas lines, and people couldn't get it. They were running out, and there was unrest because of that, to the world's third largest exporter of crude oil.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Crazy.
All right, so you're two for two, Jeremy. Right after Jerry's topic here, you need to throw another conspiracy theory in there.
I'm finished with those for today.
Oh, so you don't haven't heard Jerry's topic yet?
Well,
bring up the Federal Reserve, then I'll be all over it.
It tends to come up.
All I was going to mention is that the House Energy and Commerce Committee or subcommittee has voted to subpoena the Obama administration for internal documents related to the whole Solyndra scandal. So that story is not going to go away if that's what they were counting on, that people would forget about it. I don't think the Republican-led House is going to allow that to happen.
Yeah, I'm with that. I don't think it'll go away. It doesn't have spark. It doesn't have punch.
Well, maybe not, but I think, you know, I think they're just kind of plodding along on this because, you know, they want the timing to be such that we're, you know, like the middle of next summer when these hearings are held, and, you know, then the outcome is like late September, early October, and then you've got a few weeks, you know, to really talk about it before the election.
Just by coincidence.
Yeah.
Wow, you guys are calling me a conspiracy theorist. That's
and oil
you're
prices
saying that might influence
down.
The election. Yeah,
I'm not sure that as a scandal it's big enough to really, you know, sway a lot of people, but it is going to be good, just, you know, noise, distractions.
Oh, yeah.
To, you know, keep Obama on his toes and keep him off balance.
Right, and I was thinking, say he gets off pretty good, you know, between now and then, and you look at his first term, he had some tax issues, you know, hiring people on his cabinet with some odd tax issues, and the general little boo-boos that presidents make. And this is kind of a scandal, maybe some Fast and Furious, but pretty good. Got to say, pretty good on a whole term as far as scandal avoidance.
Yeah, in general, I'd say that's true.
Right.
But yeah,
hey, I want to say that now, and he's going to be like linked to Penn State or something.
The Fast and the Furious is going to continue simmering too, I predict.
Right, right. They got their simmering going.
And, you know, that one actually has enough gravity to to cause some problems.
Right. Yeah, I think everyone understands the, you know, the government lobbyist thing, and yeah, it's $500 million, but it doesn't have punch like the other thing.
Right. How did they blow through $500 million in 1 year? That's
I could make a panel for that much. I mean, I'll just come to your house and just drive a bike and run your battery. This is how I understand business.
They had to have a number of technical interchange meetings in Las Vegas.
Yeah,
with some customers in the sun, you know, someplace sunny.
Either that, or it was like Oprah's favorite things. You know, you get a solar panel, you get a solar panel.
Nice. And we also have the you know, you can't have government picking winners and losers. Got that talking point. Now they like tried to pick a winner and still lost.
Yeah, right.
This sounds shady from the beginning, because there were serious misgivings about even giving them the loan, and it was, according to this article, the White House was trying to speed up the decision. Why is that being overlooked, do you think, or no?
Which part? The
fact that this company was suspect from the beginning.
Yeah, I think that's being overlooked.
What? I thought that's the whole point of the whole controversy.
Well, the political hay that's going to be made on this is that the Obama administration was trying to hurry this along.
Right, right. That's the real gusto of the scandal. I don't think it's like just a bad $500 million decision.
Yeah. But, right. so the focus is there. It's not on the fact that somebody at DOE screwed up and got this ball rolling in the first place.
Right, right.
They should have looked at this company's financials or looked at their business model or whatever and said, no, sorry, you're not
right.
You're not a good risk.
And the key, they got to find the campaign contributions and link those all up. I mean, that's the goal, holy grail there.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, that's coming.
And like, how hard is that? Not to be an Obama apologist here, but you know, if that's your goal, like, I had enough resources in this internet thing. Like, if you can give me a company. Like it'd be like a game of Clue, you know, give me a company, a politician, and a cause, and I could probably link them all up, you know.
Yeah.
It was the solar panels with the Department of Energy in the bathroom.
Yeah, right.
I don't know why they're in the bathroom. It's just what came out.
Yeah, that's not even a room in Clue.
All right. That's the mystery I give my listeners.
Should have been the conservatory.
No, I have one of those in my house.
Do you?
Yeah, it's called the Liberatory.
Very nice.
There you go.
You have a
well
gong.
Played, sir. Well played.
You have a gong.
So do you guys think the administration's being as open as they should be about this?
About Solyndra?
Yeah.
I think they're in damage control mode. They're trying to distance themselves from it. They're not talking about it. You know, it's not like when Obama went to visit their plant and they tried to make it front page news. Now they're trying to bury it.
Right, right. Talk but around it. Downplay it.
This was going to be the most open administration, though.
Oh, yeah.
hope and change.
Yeah.
Well, like I said in a previous episode, it's such a nice corruption.
Right.
You know, isn't it kind of a soothing corruption? Solar panels. Some politicians in California, you know, it's just comforting.
Yeah.
Not that like KBR, you know, Halliburton stuff.
Right.
A bunch of weapons and we can go to war and make some money. Like that's just,
right.
This is kind of a dark kind of corruption. This is a light shining corruption.
Or the Iran-Contra scandal.
Right, right. Well, yeah, it just doesn't sound nice.
Right. This is much more pleasing.
Solyndra just rolls off the tongue. It's just Iran-Contra. They're not even close to each other. I don't get it. I'm not paying attention.
Too long, didn't read.
Right. Yeah, and I can only have so many degrees of my corruption. Like Iran-Contra was like a hop, skip, and a jump corruption.
Right.
You know, I can't manage that many hops.
Right.
I need it to be really simple.
I understand. And that is the majority of the people out there, I'm afraid. All right, so Rob, what's your next topic?
Oh, I'll pose a question to our listeners.
Okay,
a little thought experiment. Because I don't really have much to say about it. Maybe I do. I don't know. It's fun to on the Penn State tragedy scandal, whatever you want to call it, to compare and contrast it with the Catholic Church's issues.
Oh.
And then where do you put supporters? How do you line up the supporters? And in what ways is it the same? And in what ways is it different? Fascinating.
Well, I'm certainly not the right person to comment on this because I had never even heard of Joe Paterno until this story broke. I had no idea who he was.
Jerry.
So, did he have fans? I assume he did. Which I think is probably different from the whole Catholic Church scandal. Because
yeah.
I don't know that any of them have fans, you know, that
it's not quite like fans. I mean, I will say the one strongest feeling I have other than disgust is that like if you just take like Paterno or you map him to the Pope or something, because Paterno is very much like the Pope. He's like the Pope of football. Like I can understand a detractor. I can understand someone saying that Paterno didn't do enough, and I can understand somebody saying that he did as much as he could or as much as he thought was right and it all blew up on him. I understand. I have sympathy for both those arguments. What I have no sympathy for are the people that I say, like, how dare you question this man? He's Joe Paterno. Like, how dare you even bring this up? Which I have no patience for. Exactly the same thing with like the priest thing. Don't ask that question to Father Joe. He's a good religious man, you know. Like, yeah. No, I say if you got a question for Father Joe, you bring him up. Right. It doesn't matter, you know, that they're priests or popes. Like there's right and wrong, and it doesn't really matter what your title is. So that's the only thing that really absolutely drives me crazy is the, like, how dare people question Joe Paterno, or how dare people question this priest or this pope? Like, we're questioning it.
I agree with that. Nobody should be above the law.
Right.
Situations like this. I mean, it's pretty sick what was going on. Right. And now the rumor is that the next story to break will be that this Sandusky guy was pimping these kids out to some of the high dollar donors.
That was on Drudge Report.
No.
Yeah, it was. But I did read that too. Yeah, like, could it even expand? Yeah, which is crazy. But yeah, about the power and the money and the cover-ups and the embarrassment and the kind of looking the other way for the good of the program. What someone thinks, well, I don't want to hurt the program, or I don't want to hurt the church, or whatever it is. There's a lot of similarities there. Listener feedback, welcome.
All right, Jeremy, what do you got next?
Next, the GPS tracking. Justice Breyer warns of Orwellian government. There's a apparently a court battle going on where a suspected cocaine dealer was being tracked by the DC police. They installed GPS trackers on his car, but they did it after their warrant had expired. And one side of the argument is, well, we're just, you know, it's just tracking, seeing where he's going, where he's a bad guy, and we're trying to crack this case. But in a lot of these privacy cases, it feels like we're getting into an end justifies the means. And there's already plenty of evidence that Google and Apple were secretly tracking people through their smartphones.
Yeah.
The data's out there, and it's... I don't think anybody wants to be tracked without their knowledge or without their approval or without some reason. You know, if they had done this when the warrant was still valid, well, fine. But technology is rapidly encroaching on any idea of unlawful, not worrying about unlawful search and seizure, which this is what this falls under, really.
Right. Yeah, when you mentioned it, I thought, what's the big deal? I mean, if you got the warrant, you know, that seems like like that's just fine. But if the warrant runs out, I guess it opens up a...
Here's the thing, though. This particular case is about that. And I'm going to make the prediction that Supreme Court rules on that issue and doesn't even touch the Fourth Amendment issue that's buried in there.
You mean just the fact that the warrant ran out?
Yes.
Right.
I think they will rule based solely on that, and they won't even touch the big old ugly 900-pound gorilla in the courtroom.
Which is
that this is a violation of your Fourth Amendment rights against unreasonable searches and seizures to have anybody, any law enforcement officer, anybody really, can put a GPS tracking device on your car without a warrant.
They can?
They currently do. It happens thousands of times.
Tell us. Jeremy, are you with us?
I couldn't point to a source, but I've heard...
Are you on the Jerry train?
I've heard anecdotal... There's anecdotal evidence of that, yes.
Well, I'll have to find the link, put it in the show notes. But there was just a story about this in Wired magazine on Tuesday, I think, about a guy who... has found not one, but two of these devices attached to his car. And, you know, it turns out that he's got a cousin or something that lives in Mexico who's a drug dealer. And because his cousin used to own this car, the DEA has been tracking this guy thinking that he's a mule or something, you know, for his cousin. And so he's found two of these devices now, and they're tracking him without a warrant. And, you know, that's just one example, but they went on to interview, I forget who it was they interviewed, might have been somebody at the DEA, who confirmed that, yeah, they do this a lot. And, you know, until the Supreme Court tells them they can't, they're going to continue doing it. And it's all based on a prior Supreme Court ruling from back in the 70s. That's what they're using as their justification for it.
Before GPS was even
right.
invented.
Right. And, you know, their argument is basically that you don't have a reasonable expectation of privacy when you're moving in a public place.
Right. Yeah, I was trying to think as Jeremy was bringing it up. I was thinking, you know, one thing the feds do when they think they have a suspect in a big case, you know, to try to get them to crack, boy, they'll park outside their house. They'll watch them with binoculars. They'll follow them real close, you know, always kind of up in their guts. And they don't need a warrant for that. You don't have to even press charges or even get anywhere close to going down that process to do all that stuff. So maybe they're saying, hey, we're just watching.
Well, and that is what they're saying. And the problem with that argument is that this technology allows them to do that on a massive scale because they don't have to have human beings following everybody they're tailing, you know. So the cost of that would be prohibitive, you know. Right. But the cost of just attaching one of these little devices to somebody's, you know, car or 100 cars, allowing them to track them 24/7.
Right.
Here's conspiracy theory number three. Sorry to interrupt, but I couldn't hold it back. they just did the essentially an emergency interruption. Was it yesterday?
The test of the emergency broadcast system.
Right, right. But it was on. You know, it wasn't just the noise and the barcode you see on your TV screen. This time, this was like taking over. I don't know if they actually did anything on the internet this time, but they've talked about that. They've talked about internet, radio, TV.
Right.
So the jump here is that it's an emergency, so they activate tracking on everybody. Again, I'll go back to smartphones because that's the easiest thing to talk about. Or even if you have, you know, a lot of new cars come with these GPS systems built in. So does the government have the switch and under the guise of, well, it's an emergency, it's a national emergency, so we have to turn this on? It wouldn't take much to make that leap, I don't think.
Oh, yeah, it's pretty easy to justify anything if you just say we're in a state of emergency.
Yes. Right?
I mean, that's what finally pushed the Egyptians over the edge. Well, I don't know if that was... They'd been living in a state of emergency for 30 years or something like that when they overthrew Mubarak.
Right. Do you think, I guess, one of the exciting things is that do you think that it's a liberal government or a conservative government is more likely to pull those tricks? I have my answer. But it's not what you think. I don't think it matters. I don't think it matters between the two. And that's one of those things that unites the kind of the left and the right.
I agree with you, Rob, that I don't think it matters. I mean, we had the Patriot Act when the Republicans were in control, and now we have the latest stuff going on when the Democrats are in control.
Right,
so, it's government is their foundation is controlling people.
Right. Right. And it's the only thing that's different is might be the boogeyman you put out there as the motivation.
Yeah, it's a game as old as governments themselves.
Which drives the Jerry philosophy.
Yeah. I mean, there's no way to prevent it. It will eventually happen. All governments. Hitler did it, right? Burned down the Reichstag and blamed it on somebody else to justify building up the military and implementing martial law and, you know, all the other crazy things he did.
Yeah, like his own Gulf of Tonkin incident, right?
Exactly. Yeah, it's a false flag attack. That's what they call it. Well, and some people say that's what 9/11 was.
Yeah,
Jeremy.
No, I'm not necessarily on board with that conspiracy theory yet. I don't.
Just give it some time.
Yeah. I did work with a guy who was in the Pentagon when it was attacked, though.
How about that?
Yeah, it was kind of interesting to hear him talk about it.
Did he say he knew it was going to happen?
Well, they were sitting around talking about the World Trade Center, and one of the guys who was in the group said something about, you know, we could be a target. And then not long after that is when, you know, they hear the big crash and or the big explosion, whatever. And as they're all right, as that happened, the guy who had brought up that they could be a target said, they got us. And Lee, the guy I knew, as they're all ducking down, was laughing at himself because instead of thinking about his life or his wife or whatever, he was thinking, wow, that was very astute of that guy to realize that we were getting attacked by them right now.
Right. Yeah, that would make it all worth it. Just, you know, we're like, even if that was your last breath, you'd be like, man, I nailed that.
How did he know?
Interesting. You need to post that on some websites. You might get some attention.
No, probably not.
Use your real name.
Yeah.
Yeah, and we maybe we'll devote a whole episode to this, but yeah, I've come down on the idea that I don't believe in any kind of grand conspiracy or cause, but I do think it happened in at 9 a.m. and by 10 a.m. they pulled out the big Iraq binder off the shelf, said, "Man, we've been waiting to use this thing." You know, I think there were people all ready to go with a plan soon after it that had nothing to do with what the root cause was. Big binder, open this in case of some attack.
Is that the government or the military has contingency plans on just about everybody.
Right.
The amount of it would probably be scary to see what all they have, but it's interesting also to know that they've set out plans for, hey, let's go attack Zimbabwe, you know, and whatever the flavor of the day is for blowing right. somebody up.
It's how we roll. It's what we do.
So my next story is the four alleged militia members that were arrested in Georgia for plotting the attack on various government agents with the ricin and bombs or whatever else they were planning to build. You guys know what story I'm talking about.
Finding it.
Yeah, I printed it out and read it, and it's kind of bizarre that these old guys, I mean...
Well, yeah, it is bizarre. I mean, it's almost like a Hollywood movie, because every one of these guys, I think, is over the age of 65, and...
Get a shuffleboard table.
Yeah, you know? That's right. Can't you guys easy. Just play chess like everybody else your age? What is wrong with you? But to me, the interesting part of this story is that, you know, I think this is just another symptom. Every time I hear one of these stories of, you know, some nutcase going, you know, and doing something like that, it's unusual, first of all, that this was an actual conspiracy, you know, that there's a group of them that had all gotten together to do this. Usually it's some, you know, lone wolf that just goes off on his own and does something. But, you know, every time one of these happen, I have to think about Jefferson's quote about the tree of liberty having to be watered from time to time with the blood of patriots and tyrants. And, you know, the fact that it does need to happen periodically. And we look at these guys and they get demonized in the media and we say they're, you know, a bunch of wing nuts. But if there had been CNN back when, you know, the founding fathers were meeting in taverns to discuss overthrowing the British government and, you know, killing the redcoats and all of those things, CNN would have reported the same thing about those nutcases that, you know, they were plotting things against the government. So, I mean, we look back on that and say, well, that was perfectly legitimate. And yet, you know, when one of these stories comes to light in the modern day, somehow this is, you know, this is wrong that they're, you know, plotting these things. And, you know, I don't look at it. I don't immediately think, oh, whoa, you know, clearly these guys were wrong. I look at what ideas they were trying to promulgate and make my decision based on that, not just the fact that they were looking to kill government agents.
Yeah.
It's the killing, though. It's the plotting of the killing, isn't it? I mean, they're not writing books. They're not writing books about ending the Fed. They're making a bomb so they could kill some people.
You're right.
Are you saying that if there were no governmental motivations and some patriotic founding fathers thing, then it would be bad? That it's more okay if it has this larger, you know, perspective?
Well, I'm saying that my personal perspective on it is that the people they were plotting against are not innocents. Jeez. So it's
interesting.
It's not that they're going after a school bus full of kids. You know, they're going after ATF agents and IRS agents, and, you know, those are the red coats.
Interesting perspective, but I'm not sure I totally agree with that, because where to start? They're assuming, take 9/11. Okay. Those people in the towers were the enemy to Bin Laden. They were the financial powerhouse of the United States, which fuels our war machine, which bombs his country.
Right.
Do you think that was okay?
I wouldn't agree that he viewed, you know, the individuals in that building as the enemy. I think the attacks were largely symbolic, and he didn't really care that he was killing innocents. I mean, I don't think that any of the people in that building actually did anything, you know, to personally harm him or his people. Now, the Pentagon is a different story, that, you know, some of those people might have actually made decisions like that. So he might have a point there. Because in general, I agree with Ron Paul on the whole 9/11 thing, you know, that we poked the hornet's nest just one too many times, and we got stung. So we are at least partially culpable for what happened that day because of our foreign policy.
Yeah, I don't necessarily disagree with that. I mean, it doesn't exonerate what they did, but...
No. And I'm not excusing what they did, and I'm not excusing what these guys were planning to do, but I recognize that throughout history, there have been people who have been willing to take a stand and do the dirty work that these guys thought they were about to do.
True.
And that when we look back on, you know, our patriot forefathers, we don't view them as a bunch of, you know, crazy old guys with guns. They're heroes to us. So I just think there's a fine line between a terrorist and a freedom fighter.
Right. But to give me some historical perspective here, like those, like our Paul Revere's and all these guys who didn't exist, that Richard Dawes, who's the guy that rode with him that never gets any love? I forget what that is. Obviously, I forgot his name. It's Dawes.
Ichabod Crane.
Yeah, that guy. I mean, so when they were starting their thing, did they have the support of their people? Like, if you took a little Gallup poll, which was really a Gallup, you were on a horse. That's how they did it then.
Where's that gong again?
Do they have the majority of the support of their countrymen for doing the Tea Party, or was it just a couple kooks?
I mean,
you had your loyalists, but what was the breakdown, do we think?
I have read in the past that it was essentially broken into thirds, that a third of the people were in favor of a revolution, a third of the people were loyalists to the crown, and then another third just didn't care either way. They just wanted to be left alone.
Okay, so I have a difficult time mapping these dudes in Georgia to our modern stats. Like, I don't think you can find a third of Americans that say, hey, let's go bomb it. Let's go start some violence against the government. There are those people. I don't think it's a third.
Well,
you might be surprised.
I think we're very close to that.
33% of Americans want to go bomb an ATF agent? This podcast is so getting picked up on the...
I don't know that they would... I don't know that a third would go to that extreme, but I think a third are very displeased with the government in its current state.
Oh, I'll believe you. I got you. I'm with you there.
And would certainly be open to, you know, some unorthodox means for correcting that.
This might be short-sighted of my history, or my view of history, but the guys we think of as statesmen and our founding fathers, their big thing was they wrote a document. They didn't immediately go to making ricin and shooting at people, right?
Right. And what they wanted was to be left alone, which is, I guess, a little bit like this. But
I mean, the shot heard round the world was not preceded by any document writing, you know, that it was preceded by a Stamp Act and, you know, a tax on tea that finally just pushed a number of people over the edge. They'd had enough. And I think everybody's got their own breaking point. And for these four gentlemen, they had reached theirs. Just because they haven't turned up the temperature in the pot high enough for most of the frogs to jump out doesn't mean that, you know, it's not getting hot in here.
You know what this? Sorry. Go ahead, Rob.
No, I was just gonna say. I think the water's fine.
I was just gonna introduce a little racism to the podcast.
Oh,
is there okay. Is there any chance this is affirmative action for terrorism? Like, hey, you know, we need to get some old white guys accused of being terrorists.
That's right. We haven't had some good domestic terrorism since, what, 1995? Yeah. We're about due for some.
Well, yeah. And this is another good topic that I like to come up is every time something happens, I'll just say something happens, we like to discuss whether it's terrorism or not. You know, was the shooting in Arizona terrorism? The Fort Hood shooting? Like, when is it just crazy?
Chris Rock thing. It's just crazy.
Exactly. I tend to side, for whatever reason, that the Fort Hood shooting was more on the side of just crazy. But it seems like terrorism. But this would be domestic terrorism, wouldn't it? Wouldn't shooting up a Democrat politician's rally count as domestic terrorism?
I think so.
I think so too. And then when you try to define what that is, I mean, the terrorism to me is defined as when the act is to serve a purpose larger than whatever that act is. You know, if, like when the Virginia Tech shooter went off, like he was just absolutely nut job, you know. But I don't, and just like why 9/11 was terrorism, like you say, didn't have a beef against the poor restaurant worker on the top floor. You know, he's trying to pull a political point. Which this is. This is domestic terrorism. So we should apply all of our forces that we have against terrorism against these dudes, right?
I look at it not as necessarily as you know, terrorism or as data points in any kind of terrorist graph. It's more just data points in a growing anti-government sentiment among the population. And the frequency with which these events are occurring is increasing, if you've been paying attention, I think.
Yeah.
You know, because, you know, we seemed like, you go back to the 90s, it seemed like we had several of these stories that posed the government's strong arm tactics. You had, you know, Ruby Ridge and Waco and even the Elian Gonzalez episode. You know, was, yeah. I think, gave the government a yet another black eye. But there was enough time in between all of those incidents that, you know, you were allowed to return to some sense of normalcy in between. And now it seems to me anyway, and maybe I'm just paying more attention now. You know, maybe the frequency hasn't increased. I'm just paying more attention, or maybe it's because we've got, you know, 24-hour news channels that report on absolutely everything, that, you know, this stuff's getting reported more often. That's entirely possible. But it just seems to me like these stories occur a lot more frequently now. Like, you know, you don't even get a week in between stories of, right, of something like this to like calm down. So
I will say it's kind of interesting that this is our topic as a nation, government, role of government, taxes, finance. It's just our topic now. I mean, you know, for 6 years there, we had to talk about terrorism and those nasty Muslims. You know, that was kind of the thing we talked about, but with a big religious overtone. Stuff was always coming up about faith and apocalypses, and you know, right, it's like the whole Obama, with Obama in there playing down the faith thing, and you know, with the economy the way it is, we're just not talking about it's this is just the topic of the nation now, and you know, partly because of the economy, partly of you know who the president is, and just what's all going on.
Last year, I wrote about a number of these stories that had occurred in just a very short period of time, like 2 months. In February last year, you guys remember the guy who flew his airplane into the IRS office building down in Austin, Texas?
Indeed.
Yes.
Okay, so that was February. Then in March, there were two police officers shot inside the Pentagon subway station in D.C. by a guy who was, by all accounts, mentally ill, but, you know, he had made his anti-government sentiments known to, you know, his family and friends. So that was the beginning of March. The end of March, there was this Christian warrior group called the Hootery. You remember that? They were arrested in Michigan for plotting to kill police officers. Then in early April, there was a group calling themselves the Guardians of the Free Republic that sent letters to more than 30 state governors demanding that they resign from office or be removed. And the Guardians were devoted to dismantling government. You know, so I mean, it just seemed like the, you know, it was like, well, it was like 1 week after another. There was just, you know, some crazy story like that of somebody snapping and doing something like that.
Yeah, I will say, you know, as these topics, I think your claims of a trend are valid. I think we should also say as the topics of these of the country. It's kind of funny how the nation kind of, or at least our media, just the environment that we live in spools up a certain thing. We'll gravitate the loonies who are always out there to whatever that cause is. So it's almost like, you know, whatever that topic is can drive a certain amount of loonies to whatever that case is. You know, it's real easy to go out there and find a lot of anti-government stuff out there now. Just like 6 years ago, everybody was talking about how scary the Islamists were. You know, yeah, we're just not talking about that anymore right now.
One thing it mentions here is that they're part of a fringe militia group. And that, I thought most of those guys were up in Montana and Wyoming and
Michigan.
The Michigan militia too. But what I would like to see, I saw an article a couple of weeks ago about how gangs are rampant in the U.S. military, and especially the Army and Marines, but also the other branches. And it listed, the article listed like, I don't know, 30 or so different gangs. And, you know, me, the Midwestern guy, I'm thinking, well, it's the Bloods and the Crips, right? That's about all you have. But no, it was this huge laundry list of gangs. And I would like to see something similar about the militias and the other groups that you mentioned, Jerry, and the who sent the letters around. I would like to, I think it would be interesting to see all these different organized groups with this goal of taking down the government.
Well, I'm always skeptical when I hear the term fringe militia, you know, because that seems to be shorthand now for, you know, it gives militias a bad name, in my opinion, because, you know, there are good militias out there. There are guys that are actually preparing for what a militia is supposed to be prepared for. And they're not talking about overthrowing the government. They're, you know, they're talking about defending their homes and their families from, you know, Red Dawn or whatever. You know, whatever scenario you can dream up. Yeah. And that is the point of the militias. And you know, the framers intended the militia to be our first and last line of defense in those cases. You know, they were opposed to having standing armies. Standing armies are not allowed in the Constitution. The militia was supposed to serve that purpose. So I just think that, you know, the militia, that term has been demonized to a certain extent over the last 20 years for anybody who's been paying attention.
Much like anarchists.
Yeah. I think they get a bad rap. Of course, you know, it doesn't help that there are guys out there claiming to be members of militias that are, you know, planning ricin attacks and whatnot, that they're not helping their cause any by doing that. But I don't know. A militia is what it is. And I don't think just because somebody's a member of one means that they're, you know, a crackpot.
Good point.
Yeah, because we don't think you're a crackpot, Jerry.
Well, I'm not a member, so.
The other interesting thing about this article is that they still have the courtroom drawing instead of a picture. Like, you know, did you print it out?
Yeah.
Yeah, they have a drawing of the two old guys sitting there with their hand right up to their ears. And can't they just take a picture, or is that illegal, or what?
I think they can make them look even crazier if the artist just draws them.
They should have had me draw it.
The guy on the left looks like Ernest Hemingway.
Or Santa Claus, I'm sure bitch.
All right,
well, we're going to go ahead and take a break right now, and when we come back, we're going to dig into some listener feedback. Jump right into some listener feedback that we've received since our last episode. And I'm going to start off with, I guess this was Eric said, hey Jerry, remember those artificial outside the government islands you mentioned on one of the very first episodes? They got mentioned in the Colbert Report last night. And he provided a link, and I watched that segment. It was pretty funny. So I'd encourage our listeners to check that out. But for those that don't remember what I'm talking about, this guy, his last name's Thiel, and I can't remember his first name now. But he was one of the founders of PayPal, so he's like a billionaire. And he's funding the construction of these floating islands off the coast of California that are going to become some sort of libertarian utopia.
Let's go.
Yeah, I always tell my sister I'm buying an island, because when I start ranting about the way things are, I want my own island, though.
Can we visit?
Maybe. extend invitations, and I'll decide when you have to leave.
There's no work visas or anything.
No, definitely not.
No. You're out of here, buddy.
That's right.
Eric also says in our ongoing discussion of climate change, Eric says, I agree in principle with the scientists need to communicate better argument, but I don't think the answer is that simple. What I hear you saying is that if scientists just explained their research better to you, then you'd buy it. I honestly don't believe that's true. Let's take the vaccine example. This affects you directly because you have to decide whether or not to vaccinate your kids and decide how safe and effective you believe vaccines to be. And for every why vaccines are good article you point to, I guarantee I'll find one debunking the science and telling you why vaccines are evil. So even with scientific communication the way it is right now, something in you has decided that the science of vaccines is acceptable. And he says in parentheses, I assume you all had your kids vaccinated. But climate science isn't. That's very interesting to me.
I had tip to Eric there. I think the way he frames that argument off the global warming thing is something I never thought about. Like, why do we believe some science and other ones we don't? You know, it's equally as dense, equally as confusing, and we need to trust experts, and we trust these elite experts to tell us how the planets work. But then when it comes to this issue, we have doubts.
Yeah, you're right. That is interesting why this topic is special in that regard.
Right.
And I'm not sure what the answer is.
That's probably the most interesting thing I've ever even thought about the global warming topic.
I mean, I think that for me personally, there's just something something counterintuitive about it. You know, like it's not that I don't right. believe it just because, you know, of who it's coming from or that, you know, I'm not questioning the science so much as it doesn't quite jive with my own experience.
That's part of it for me, and another part of it is that they try to ram it down our throat and say, if you brought up, well, what about this? They would say, no, it's decided. You know, stop. You're a naysayer, and you're going to kill the planet because you're not listening to us. You know, the debate is over. Enough already. Just get on board.
That's right.
Where it.
Yeah, and that does have the effect of turning off a lot of people, even if they might be receptive to the argument. It's, you know, the way it's delivered is.
And I think one thing we learned from the 9/11 stuff is anything served up with a dose of panic and fear should raise an eyebrow.
Yeah, that's true.
And I think we kind of learned that lesson, and now here's another one, and we're like, wait a second here.
But by the same token, I mean, if things are really as dire as they say they are, then I would expect somebody to be jumping up and down with, you know, with their hair on fire saying, look, you need to listen to this. You need to, you know, change what you're doing. Otherwise, we're all on this sinking ship together, and you need to help us bail.
Right.
So.
Yeah, that's Al Gore. He's jumping up and down, but his hair can't catch fire. It's made of a poly resin.
Asbestos.
Yes.
You guys know I have a lot of feelings on this topic. So.
Yeah.
Oh, we'll invite you back.
Yeah.
Devote it to this. Moving on.
Snake oil.
Well, since you brought up Al Gore, I will just say that, you know, that's one of the reasons that I did give him so much credit for An Inconvenient Truth. Because
All right, here we go.
Because... regardless of whether or not, you know, the data he used was legitimate or not, I think that he did a good job of making his case, getting his message across in layman's terms. And, you know, he was also, you know, and I hate to use the word charismatic to describe Al Gore, but he was...
lifelike.
He was less robotic.
Yeah, he was the de facto... rock star, if you will, of the movement. You know, he was the face of the environmental movement. And I think he's, you know, he's fallen out of favor for a number of reasons, and he's no longer in the spotlight. And that has hurt the movement, because they really do need a rock star. They need somebody out there who's debunking the skeptics' claims. And you know, and this, the skeptics probably need their own rock star for the same reason. Because otherwise it's just this battle of anonymous scientists, you know, talking to each other through peer-reviewed journals that nobody reads. And, right. you know, without somebody who's going to stand up there in front of a camera that everybody recognizes to be a spokesperson, the debate just kind of gets lost.
Yeah. Yeah, our human minds cannot comprehend an issue so abstract without attaching it to somebody. He put himself out there. I think certain members of the panel named Jeremy would say...
Well, you know, and
he did it for his own personal gain.
Yeah, well, and
he's
I'm
a profiteer, and
I'm not going to argue with you on those points because I think they're largely true. I'm just giving him credit for making a damn good PowerPoint presentation, right, and then right. you know, riding that for as long as he could.
It animated and stuff. Like mine never animate. Like sometimes the arrow will come like out of the left, like pew, point to a certain thing. This is all I got.
Wow. Jerry, are you going to read any of my feedback from last week?
No.
Oh, man.
No.
All right. Because your golden opportunity to have a listener one week is now here to talk about his feedback the next week. I guess my feedback wasn't good enough.
Yeah, we've heard enough from you tonight.
All right.
You feel free to send feedback on this episode.
That Jeremy guy was a dork. No wonder he and Ken get along.
So we talked about taxes last time, and my contention that taxes are theft or armed robbery or slavery or whatever you want to call them. We talked about replacing the income tax with a usage tax or a consumption tax. And one of our listeners said, sorry, usage taxes are not actually avoidable. You got to live, right? Unless you consider living on a farm and growing all of your own food and not selling any of it and not buying anything from anybody else, unless you consider that living, then no, usage taxes are not really avoidable. So I think that's an interesting point.
Well, you can barter.
Yeah, you could.
Might be a little rough trying to get a car, but
yeah,
depends on what you're willing to barter.
True. And hey, Steve Jobs didn't have license plates, so you know, he found a loophole.
Yeah.
Well, regarding taxes, mention the law. If people haven't read that, that might be a worthy.
Oh yeah, I put a link to that in the show notes.
Okay, never mind. Yeah.
Friedrich Bastiat's The Law.
Legalized plunder.
Yeah, it's a very interesting read. And it's a free book because it was written like 300 years ago. No, I guess it was 200 years ago, but still, it's there's a link there in the show notes so you can download that and read it. Maybe this is one of your comments, Jeremy. Rob was on to something with the mortgage shaftorama. There are forces.
Yes.
And some illegal practices beyond the control or influence of the general populace, and so pervasive that in-place financial controls fail to curb them. These practices are used to target and devalue currency, devalue the market in general, and influence interest rates, which in turn drives the housing market. Thus, people doing what they are supposed to do, yet their house is suddenly underwater.
Preach it, Jeremy. Or me. Preach it, me.
No, I thought you brought up a good point, and Ken just kind of tried to dismiss it outright. You know, I don't know that I have more to say on that, but part of this comes from, I'm reading that book, The Web of Debt, and they talk extensively about this kind of stuff in there.
There's also a link to that in the show notes.
Okay.
As well as The Creature from Jekyll Island, which I'd recommend everybody read.
So, Rob.
Yes.
I mean, is that what you were kind of going for when you brought up that mortgage thing?
Yeah. You echoed my feelings there.
All right.
Yeah, that's what I was going for. And that's, yeah.
Well, I certainly tend to agree that there are forces at work here that, you know, are behind the scenes that, you know, we don't have a whole lot of control over. I think any time that those forces are engaged in fraud, they deserve to be rooted out and prosecuted for that. But I think that a lot of the people who are up in arms are looking at those forces, those hidden forces, and saying that they're bad just because they're hidden. And that's not necessarily true. And certainly, you know, the people who run the financial companies, they have a right to run their companies the way they want. And as long as they're not engaged in fraud, I'm not willing to say that that they should be, you know, punished or hyper-regulated for just making a profit, regardless of how big that profit might be.
Hmm. I have more to say on this than the time allows. But we'll have to do it on some episode when Jeremy's back, so I got him on my side. I like a majority.
All right. And Jeremy, you also said that you've received one of the TSA notices in your bag, and they did a lousy job of packing it back the way it was.
Yes. They did not tell me to get my freak on, girl, though.
Well, that's good.
Yeah. I think their note was to buy some more fashionable clothing.
So you're in favor of the dollar coin, huh?
I don't know that I have enough information to say, oh yeah, it's going to revolutionize the, you know, our monetary system. But having spent a fair amount of time in Finland, where the 1 and 2 euro coins are,
right,
that's about all you have as far as the lowest denomination paper denomination is the 5. I didn't see any real problem with it. I don't have any great aversion to the dollar here, so I don't know that it's kind of a wash for me, I guess. But my question was, would dollar coins be issued by the U.S. Treasury and therefore not a Federal Reserve note, so they wouldn't accrue? We wouldn't be borrowing it from the Federal Reserve. It would be our own. It'd be the government issuing money.
I'm not sure that's true.
Okay.
I
suspect it's not. I really doubt the Federal Reserve would allow that to happen.
Right. I think the dividing line there is that you know, coins are made by the U.S. Mint, which is a government agency, and the you know, the paper currency is printed by the Bureau of Engraving and Printing, which is also a government agency. However, I believe the Bureau of Engraving and Printing is somehow overseen by the Fed directly, whereas the Mint is not.
Right, and that was my, I didn't articulate it quite that well, but that was my point.
Okay, I see what you're saying then.
Yes.
But ultimately, you know, for every dollar that gets made, whether it's paper or coin, that dollar originates with debt that comes from the Federal Reserve. So I don't think that coins are immune from that.
Right.
Yeah, I could be wrong about that, though. But that, you know, that's my understanding, is that all of our circulating currency originates with the Fed, regardless of whether it's paper or coinage.
So is that we borrow a set amount and then certain goes to paper, certain goes to coin, or am I way off the mark here?
No, I think that's right.
Okay.
And, you know, that's also why we've got over $1 billion in the golden dollars that are sitting in the Fed's vaults costing us rent.
Yeah. The Fed is just a...
Yeah,
it's criminal.
It's evil.
Criminal.
Oh, yes. You guys.
Come on, Rob, get on board.
So, I think that's about it. I want to thank all of our listeners.
Yeah.
And we certainly appreciate you and appreciate your feedback. Make sure you visit our Facebook page. facebook.com/MidwestPeace, or you can check out our own website, which is MidwestPeaceProcess.com. I also want to give a shout out to all my fellow Marines. Happy birthday, Devil Dogs. We're 236 years old today.
Hoorah.
Thanks
for letting me be a panelist.
Hey,
you're welcome. Thanks for joining us. You did a great job, Jeremy.
Way to go, Jeremy.
We are going to, we'll probably take the Thanksgiving week off, and our next episode will be the week after the holiday. And we'll hopefully tackle the topic of rights and where they come from and what they are and how we define them. So thanks again for listening, and we'll see y'all next time.
Bye now.
Bye.
Folks, everybody knows there is a war on the wealthy in this country. And the only good news is the rich people have all the polo mallets. And things are starting to get rough, folks. Massive demonstrations, uprisings by the downtrodden have happened all over the country with unreasonable demands for economic equality and threats of cannibalism. They know we're delicious. Who told? Folks, the secret is out. I'm particularly well marbled. I spend all day penned in my desk, eating corn, drinking beer, and being massaged by Japanese women. I'm human Kobe beef. Folks, it is time for a special emergency installment